ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi there. Just a heads up, this episode of Parental's Anything deals with eating disorders and mentions suicide. If you need extra support, we'll put some resources in the show notes.
It was just skipping of meals, and there was also frantic exercising. She was really pushing it. An hour and a half or 2 hours exercising each day.
As a parent, seeing your child suffer is crushing. But when that child has an eating disorder and you're watching them disappear before your very eyes, both physically and emotionally, it's like a kind of torture.
It's excruciating. To have a child that's is pretty much basically trying to kill themselves in a slow and controlled way is a parent's worst nightmare.
Hi, I'm Bec Sparrow, and on this Parental as Anything Teens, how to help your child with an eating disorder, and because eating disorders seem to take the whole family hostage, how to support everyone else in the household. I work with teenagers in schools every day of my life, and eating, food, diet culture, it's so prevalent. Eating disorders do affect girls more, but boys are not immune. And the stats back it up. There's been a 21% increase in disordered eating in the last decade alone. And this episode is really close to home for me. My own goddaughter is currently battling anorexia nervosa. And I can tell you, it's unravelling her entire family. Here's Sam, which, a reminder, is what we're calling all of our parents, whose eldest daughter has been battling anorexia for 2.5 years. It all began when she was just 14.
The weight loss and the restriction of food was not dramatic at the beginning, but it soon became so. There's all the social pressure of being, she was at a new school and she started in year eight. And of course, COVID just had a massive effect. She was not able to pick up the friendships that she wanted to at school and continue those friendships in a way that you might normally do if there wasn't a pandemic going on.
Because of the pandemic, Sam's daughter met with a psychologist online.
We had a chat with her and she diagnosed her straight away. By the middle of 2022, she was in hospital and not well at all. Some very, very low weights and some very worrying times. We had grave fears for her life, really.
And what was it like seeing your daughter in hospital?
Look, you know, the hospitalisation was actually a relief because we had run out of solutions, really. So to have her being refed through a tube and so forth was, you know, at least we knew she was in a caring place.
In hospital, Sam's daughter got the support she needed, but there was still a lot more ahead of them.
I pretty much stopped work for 2 years, and once she was out of hospital, I was going into school 3 times a week, supervising 2 meals a day, and that went on for weeks and weeks and weeks. Once the eating disorder became a little bit more under control, then a whole raft of other issues got let loose, as it were. This resulted in a suicide attempt, and quite a serious one.
Oh, how awful.
That was early last year, and we got her to the hospital straight away. And we're in the waiting room of the emergency department, and suddenly she had a seizure in front of me and just turned blue. You know, it was really horrific. And unfortunately, my younger daughter, my 13-year-old at the time, witnessed this as well, and that was really, really tough.
Sam and his family have been through the ringer. When an eating disorder takes hold, it's not only the sufferer who's impacted. The whole family, including siblings, are caught in the whirlpool. Sarah Cox is a clinical psychologist, and as the National Helpline Manager of the Butterfly Foundation, she's on the front line talking to young people impacted by eating disorders.
Let's unpack what's going on with our teenagers with this prevalence of eating disorders. So how do they manifest in a teenager's life?
Yeah, so the average onset of the majority of eating disorders is around adolescence or even early adulthood. there is some research emerging that is suggesting that the onset may be starting to shift a bit younger towards children as young as 12. And in fact, some children as young as 5 have been diagnosed with eating disorders, which is, of course, quite sad.
5. That's so young.
We also know as well that early identification and early intervention can help reduce the severity and duration of eating disorders. And in fact, if we, you know, notice those signs quite early on, prevention can be possible.
So what are some early warning signs?
So dieting, we might start judging ourselves based on our appearance. We might start following a lot of things on social media that are portraying an unrealistic or unachievable standard of beauty or body ideals. And it's usually the combination of those factors that can really start to spiral towards more and more escalating behaviours and then into the development of a more fully blown eating disorder.
That's tricky, Sarah, because, I mean, this is a lot of teenagers suddenly talking about, they won't say dieting, healthy eating, or clean eating, or suddenly being vegetarian or vegan. What point as a parent are you meant to sort of go, oh, hang on, what's going on here?
Yeah, it's a really tough gig for parents. It's estimated that around 1 in 5 adolescent boys and 1 in 3 adolescent girls actually do engage in what could be considered disordered eating.
Wow, I didn't know it was that high.
I think it's a lot of what parents can do. It's definitely being attuned to those possible early warning signs, but not jumping to conclusions. But it's around trying to have open discussions, trying to seek to understand what might be going on for the child.
Okay, so is there anything else that parents can do to stop eating disorders taking root?
I think it's also about the parent being aware of their own relationship with food and exercise, being aware of their own commentary that they might have in relation to food or exercise and their own body, talking about food as kind of a joyous experience, focusing on the connection element of sharing a meal, and really trying to role model acceptance of their own body and physical appearance, and really trying to encourage in themselves and their children a self-worth that's not linked to the size, shape, or appearance of the body.
What would be the thing that you would see in a household that would make you go, first red flag?
Noticing a pattern of things like rapid weight changes, avoiding certain foods in quite a strong or rigid way. If they seem to have a preoccupation with food, eating, weight, or exercise, if they're eating in secret and avoiding family meal times, or if there's strong changes in their mood, I think if there's a combination of some of those signs, that's when the parent would be wanting to try to have that kind and curious conversation with their child.
Sarah, let's talk about the 15 to 19-year-old age group. Why do you think we have seen a spike in that age group?
Can be a time of a lot of academic pressure. So they can be starting to feel stress around school, around that transition from being a child, becoming an adolescent, and then moving towards becoming an adult. Also engaging in disordered eating behaviours. Social media does not cause eating disorders. What we do know, though, is that exposure to all of those unrealistic and unattainable images that people can access 24/7 via their phone and via their social media accounts, that can contribute to body dissatisfaction. And body dissatisfaction is a key risk factor for the development of eating disorders.
And I guess as well, Sarah, that some parents might not realise, but when you are on platforms like TikTok, that you can find yourself going down a rabbit hole, that you watch one or two videos on what you think are, you know, intermittent fasting or clean eating, and the algorithm will continue to keep serving up videos, and you can not realise that you are being fed at times increasingly perhaps dodgy or dangerous or unhealthy content.
Yeah, and something that parents can try to talk to their children about is around just developing those social media literacy skills. So helping to analyse the content that they're seeing, recognising that this is filtered, this is edited, this is not achievable, to reduce that chance of comparison and also help them to learn how to curate their social media feed so that they've got some body diversity and also minimizing exposure to that toxic content.
Thankfully, Sam's daughter is in a pretty good place at the moment.
She's now 16 and we're very grateful that she's definitely on the way out of the worst of the crisis.
What do you think was the thing that maybe sparked her way out?
She was at a family get-together and she just watched her cousins, who are all different shapes and sizes, eating whatever they wanted to. She sort of saw that and just went, oh, I can do that too. It was almost like the last part of her brain that wasn't taken over by the anorexia clocked that. And I think that was the beginning of the journey out of that. And actually, oddly enough, even though the suicide attempt was extremely hard to go through, it was also a watershed in many respects, because after that, my daughter just went, I don't want to die. I actually want to live.
Oh, what a relief for you, Sam.
Yeah, and I'm so proud of her, really, because it's such a battle and it takes such a will to survive. Okay, it'll be with her all her life, but it's not, at the moment, a fatal illness, thank goodness.
Yeah. After 2 years of hell, Sam's eldest daughter is in a relatively good place. Sarah, what does life look like in the long term for people with an eating disorder?
What we do know is that recovery is absolutely possible and that hope is a really important thing to hold, both for the families, the parents and the impacted individuals as well. We know that the recovery journey looks different for different people. So for some people, it might be a relatively short process and then they feel that they can maintain that recovery. For some people, it is a more longer journey. We know that there can be definitely ups and downs, and it's almost to be expected as part of the process. So I absolutely think there's hope for Sam and for his daughter. And I think having loving parents, providing that safe, consistent home environment, that's a really big protective factor that's going to help both his daughters.
So for parents who have a teen with an eating disorder who is on the path to recovery, what signs should they be looking out for that things could be going in the wrong direction?
If there's rapid weight changes, if she started to seem to be avoiding certain foods or becoming really preoccupied with food or eating or her weight, if it looked like she was engaging in that excessive exercise again, avoiding eating as a family, any sort of seemingly significant change to her behaviour or mood would be indicators that maybe some of those signs were starting to reemerge.
Sam's youngest daughter was there throughout the turmoil of her sister's eating disorder.
It does actually have this widespread implication for all relationships in the family. It's a disease, a condition that comes into a household and creates mayhem, like addiction. You know, I watched my own sister go through anorexia and mental health institutes when I was a small child. The long-term effect of that was massive. I've carried trauma all my life and, you know, sorry, from my daughter's point of view, I'm more worried about her in the future. I feel as if my older daughter, you know, will be as strong as an ox for the rest of her life because she's been through this. But for my younger daughter, to actually watch her sister turn blue in front of her, you know, was...
And has your younger daughter been able to talk to you about it all?
Not in great detail. And her coping mechanism is sport mostly. And I'm so grateful for that. And she's the model student. But what's that actually hiding? She's not wanting to talk about it with me right now. But how do I make opportunities for her to share how she's feeling about it? I want her to be able to talk about what she saw and what she went through. I'm worried about the impacts on her as she becomes a woman, just in terms of carrying that trauma in her life. Is there anything I can do now that will lessen the effects later on?
Sarah, now that things have reached a safe place for his eldest daughter, how can Sam help his other daughter with all the trauma that she's gone through?
It's so understandable that whenever one child has a severe, whether it's a physical or a mental illness, it really takes up a lot of the parents' time and energy. And so it's so understandable that maybe the other child may feel invisible or feel like their needs are not being met. I guess fortunately, though, the research does show us that most young people do tend to recover pretty well following trauma. Most young people display quite extraordinary resilience. I think it's also helpful to just keep trying to meet her where she's at. So just consistently letting her know that he loves her, that he's there for her, and trying to create those opportunities to talk and connect, and trying to create a shared understanding of if or when she wants to talk, she can.
It can be really rough looking after someone with an eating disorder, can't it?
It's a really tough gig, and I really want to acknowledge what Sam has done for both his daughters in his love and support and what he's continuing to do with them. He's showing up, and that's really incredible. I think it's trying to find that balance of being firm where needed, at the same time being loving as much as possible. We're all human, but trying to stay calm and trying not to react. So I would really encourage Sam to balance not only the needs of his daughters, but also giving himself permission to try and make some space and time for his own identity, his own relationships and self-care that sit outside of his role as a father. I think trying to make intentional ways to add a little bit of fun, a little bit of joy, trying to focus on things that don't revolve around food or the eating disorder is so important.
Sam's trying to connect with both of his daughters and create new positive memories. After the suicide attempt, Sam bought his youngest daughter a gaming console.
She and I play FIFA together, so I went out and got an Xbox or whatever it was, you know, the next day, and said, look, I want us to remember this in a happy way as well. And I wish I hadn't, though, because she beats me every single time.
Do you have something that you do with your elder daughter or no?
Well, we do watch movies together on occasion, and I'm in training to go trekking in Nepal, so I've started doing some local walks, and I reckon I'll get her along on one of those. That would be fantastic.
So, Sarah, I know that right now there is a family who's listening who are absolutely in the throes of having a child or a teenager with an eating disorder, and maybe life feels very bleak and very difficult right now. What would you want to say to them?
My main messages for families who are impacted right now would be that hope is definitely there. Recovery is absolutely possible for every person. And the more personal support a person has, the more they can engage with professional support as well, is going to help them through their recovery process. So just try to hold that hope and try to reach out to get the right support and take care of themselves as well, because it is a really difficult pathway to be walking.
Thanks to Sarah Cox, Butterfly Foundation National Helpline Manager and Clinical Psychologist, for her expertise, and to Sam for sharing his oftentimes very painful story on Parental as Anything Teens. You know, eating disorders unravel families, and often parents have to give up work or they have to start working from home just to supervise meals. And the emotional load of trying to keep your child alive is incredibly heavy. And you know what? Like all parenting problems, you can't tap out of this, no matter how hard it gets. So given that, what are the key things to keep in mind? Firstly, there are so many factors that can lead to a child developing an eating disorder. So many things out of your control. So this is what I'm saying to you. It is not your fault. So what can we do? We can be mindful of the kind of family culture we're creating around food, bodies, and exercise. Model for your kids an environment that, I guess, de-emphasizes the way you look, focusing on other more important stuff. Adopt the rule, we don't comment on other people's bodies. Secondly, let's see, keep an eye out for those early warning signs, because catching things early really is key. So when conversation, I guess, keeps going to, I don't know, eating habits or a restrictive diet is suddenly introduced, or your child is suddenly doing a massive amount of exercise, check in with them. Similarly, if things have reached like a stasis, keep an eye out for changes. Speaking of checking in, it's about finding those unexpected moments of connection and meeting your kids where they are. I also want to say to whoever's listening that you are not alone, that having a family member with an eating disorder is an incredibly isolating and difficult and hellish landscape to be navigating. But there are thousands of Australian families in the exact same boat right now. And know this, kids, both the ones with mental disorders and their siblings, they're bloody resilient. So don't lose hope. Recovery is possible. So I want you to look after yourself because it's probably going to be a long and bumpy journey. But I am here with you for the ride. If you need help with your teen, send us an email to teens@abc.net.au and make sure you follow us on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't be shy. If you know parents who might benefit from having a listen, share our podcast around. This podcast was recorded on the traditional lands of the Turrbal and Yagara peoples. Parental as Anything Teens is mixed by Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. It's produced by Hannah Riesch and Josie Sargent. The supervising producer is Tamar Cranswick, and Alex Lolbach is the executive producer.
Conversations.
Spend an hour in the life of someone else.
We need to cross a bridge. Suddenly, I just heard one scream and I'm falling down somewhere.
Someone who has seen and done remarkable things.
My next recollection, someone, believe it or not, in Israel, screaming in perfect Russian, "Do you remember who you are?"
Hear the latest conversations on the ABC Listen app.